This episode is from a series of talks recorded at Te Pātakatoi Adam Art Gallery, titled Through a Contemporary Lens, Artists in Response. This series featured Te Upoko o Te Ika a Māori-based artists who were invited to share their response to particular photographs in the exhibition A Different Light, First Photographs of Aotearoa. In this episode, we hear artist Maya Stevens responding to three images of Wahine Māori. In Mrs. Karatai's House by John H. Scott, Wahine Māori Wearing a Tiara by John McCarrigal, and an image of an unidentified Wahine attributed to the American Photographic Company. As you listen, you can look at the photographs mentioned in this episode by following the link to the Adam Art Gallery website.
To begin, I'm just going to start off with a karakia, just to kind of ground us here today. Ko te hā, ko te hau o tēnei kaupapakau. He au kaue ora, he ia ia, kia pū, kia iho, kia take. He aitanga, he whakapapa, he whakarangi. Ko e rā e rongo whakairia ki runga, ake ki runga. Kia wātia, kia wātia, aira kua wātia. Haumie, huie, tae kie. Firstly, thank you everybody for being here today. I wasn't expecting this before. This many people, I'm kind of nervous now, but kei te pai. He uri tēnei no Ngāti Kahungunu, rongo mai wahine Ngāti Rangi, ko Maya tōku ingoa. But to begin, I wanted to talk about the term whakāhua, which is the kupu Māori for photograph. When you break this word down, whaka is a prefix to make something into an action, and āhua means your appearance or your true nature. And so essentially what whakāhua means is to uplift the Māori or mana of someone or something's āhua. So as a photographer, you would essentially be a kai whakāhua. You are someone who uplifts the Māori or mana of someone's āhua. So when I look at these images, I ask myself, is the person behind the camera a photographer or a kai whakāhua? There's a few things when I look at these photos that I kind of was trying to figure out what might answer this question. And I think about the positionality of the person behind the camera. So that's thinking about their gender, their ethnicity, their sexual orientation, their religion, class, all of those things. And during this period of early settler colonial photography, it was more often than not being photographed through a white patriarchal lens. So that's where I begin to place myself when responding to and reflecting on these images. The second thing that really caught my attention was the titling of these images. The one beside me here is called Wahine Māori Wearing a Tiara. The one that's further back is called Unidentified Wahine. So then I'm kind of asking, what does that tell me about this photographer and how they came to know the person who was sitting in front of them? It's the fact that, you know, this far along, we don't know. And these are real ancestors, right? We don't know the name of this person because it wasn't recorded. And I think that a huge part of it lifting someone's mana and their Māori is to remember their name. Naming, you know, it's a really, really important thing. Place names, people especially, It's your identity. You know, your mana, your Māori is embedded in your ingoa. That far image to the back is called In Mrs. Karetai's House, and it's this really beautiful little image of Mrs. Karetai sitting in front of her mantelpiece in her home. And I was really curious to know what steps took place for the photographer to gain access to her home, to have her sit in front of the fire, and to photograph her in her environment. It's quite fascinating because in a lot of the photographs in this exhibition, in this here space, we don't know the context in which they were photographed and what the intentions were behind the photographs as well. A lot of those early ethnographers kind of invented this thing called the noble savage, which leads me into what is pictured here beside me, this wahine Māori wearing a tiara. It's kind of, it's interesting. I'm just imagining what it would have been for this woman to be placed in the studio and to, you know, whether or not it was her choice to have this tiara placed upon her head or if it was directed by the photographer, we'll never know. But we have this example here now of this wahine Māori wearing a tiara. It could mean anything. It's basically up to the interpreter now. And I suppose that's why it's so important that as a photographer now in a modern context, we're asking ourselves whether or not we are wanting to be a photographer or a kai whakahua. Because intention is all well and good, but at the end of the day, it's all up to the eye of the beholder. It's all up to those that are interpreting the photograph. And so these images, as beautiful as they are, you know, aside, I think the main thing it made me reflect on is how we are able to uplift the mana and the Māori of those that we are photographing. How might we do that? I think it can look different for every photographer, any photographer. For me, it looks like opening with karakia. For starters, it looks like knowing the names of the people that I might be taking photos of. And there's a lot of thought and consideration that goes into thinking about where then that image is going to be read. And it's something that I question still now in the age of technology, how things get put out into the universe because we can't necessarily control how they're being read. I think in this context, it's really beautiful that these photographs are being honoured and uplifted, and that this exhibition is allowing people to come in and appreciate the work of these photographers, these early photographers, but it still leaves a lot of unanswered questions. So then what information do we attach to the photographs we're putting out, you know, into the techniverse as well? These are all things that we have to consider now as modern day photographers, whether you are an Indigenous photographer or not. And there are a lot of ethics now that we have to consider as photographers too, but I think beyond that, beyond all those rules that are written, and think about our positionality and how it is that we're relating to the people that we place in our studio, and not just people, but maybe landscapes or objects too. How are we uplifting their Māori, their mana? Those are things that I ask myself when I look at these images, and things that I really urge everybody in here to ask as well, because I think that that kind of thinking can also be carried into other contexts as well. Kate began this talk by mihiing to everybody in this room, by mihiing to us, introducing herself, laying that foundation. It's little things like that. Just going into more about the noble savage and the dusky maiden, this era of particularly Polynesian people that were being portrayed during this period as these savages that were seemingly quite well integrated into colonial society to be noble, to be exoticized. I'd even go as far to say fetishized as well. It's really, it's that era of photography has really impacted the way in which I've carried myself since as a photographer, since learning about all of this. Because how then are you able to stop perpetuating those same faults that were really damaging to the way in which Indigenous people were perceived? There's a plaque on the wall behind me that talks about how a lot of these imagery was sold to foreigners without their permission. And in doing so, it reinforced these ideas of how Indigenous peoples, specifically in Polynesia, were, when it wasn't necessarily true to. I suppose the real depths in which we were carrying people. And it brings me back to this image with this wahine wearing a tiara, the way it was considered to be perceived in a certain way. What was his intention when he kind of took that photo and constructed it? I think it's worthwhile if after this talk, and I'd even encourage people to, while I'm talking as well, just to look at it and look at the expression on her face. It's kind of, I don't know, she seems somewhat, well, very stern. There isn't a whole lot of life. And there's a lot emanating from it. You can kind of read what might be going on inside her head, but I guess that ties back into why considering Māori is really important as well. I remember hearing, and while I was sort of researching about colonial photography, that when it was first introduced to Māori, when the first photographs were shown to them, they were afraid because it felt like us of our Māori, because this still photograph had essentially been taken of a living thing that doesn't feel, or at least at that time, wouldn't have felt pono, like it wouldn't have felt real, genuine. And I'm not entirely sure where that thinking transitioned, but fast forward, if you look at our practices with kawemate and the ways in which we've adapted photography into our culture, we now hold photographs with so much reverence because they are proof, living proof of our ancestors. And now when you go to Wharenui and you look at the walls, they're all lined with photographs of our ancestors, living proof that they were here, that if not for those portraits, we wouldn't have them, right? And so I'm really curious to know, I guess, that we got used to it. We got used to these ethnographers coming through and taking photographs of us, and then we probably saw the value in it because those people would have passed on and we still had these objects to carry with us through life and to remember our ancestors by. And I think the fact that remembering is a really, really important thing for us. Knowing the names of our tipuna is really, really important for us. Naturally just became a part of our culture. And it was kind of a way that we adapted to these changes. And we live in an era now where more Māori and Indigenous are behind the lens. And we have the autonomy to be able to photograph our own people. It's important then that we know how to do it in a way that is tika without perpetuating the same cycles of the past, right? I think we've found a way to reclaim, you know, these historical photographs, but there are still layers and layers and layers of consideration that has to go into coming at it from a really authentic angle. And these were the whole tangents that these three images in particular sent me on. But ultimately my question was, is the person behind the camera a photographer or a kaiwhakaahua? I also was thinking about how, you know, language around photography and how we sort of describe that we're taking someone's photo in English. It feels really colonial, the way it's framed. I know that in other languages like German, for example, it's Foto machen, you like make a photo rather than take one. But I think for us and everybody in this room, it's about shifting the way we think about the language around photography too, so that we're reframing how we might take a photograph as well. Take a photograph, that I just used it again. If we think about making a photograph instead, we think about the action of being a kaiwhakaahua and about it being at the core, about uplifting the Māori and mana of the person or being, then we shift away from a lot of the damage that was done historically. But in saying all of that, it is not to discount the work of these photographers in this room, on these walls, because they're still living proof. Unfortunately, we don't have names to identify these wahine, aside from the one at the back. But they're still here and they're still living because of those moments captured in time. It's very nuanced. Yeah, it's not as black and white, I don't think, as we think. Because if not for a lot of those early settler photographers, we wouldn't have this proof here today, which is history, you know, and it is another form of remembrance. But those were the most important points that I wanted to get across And I don't want to go on for too long, but I think that I did get the point across. Mana and Māori, right? and a little reo lesson sprinkled in there too. Yeah, so just for a little bit of background on myself, I studied a Bachelor of Design majoring in photography at Toiro Whārangi, Massey University. And then I went on to do a full immersion program in Te Reo. And my main focus years in terms of my creative practice was around indigenizing the lens. And it started off with the process of decolonizing the lens, and that looks like learning about this. Looks like understanding what the history of photography is and how it has impacted us today. It looks like how we can ensure that we're not repeating history as well. And then it looks like integrating Indigenous practices and ways of being into this contemporary contemporary tool. And for me, even though it's an entirely different ball game, it also meant learning my reo as well. And it's come in handy because I'm able to understand terms like whakahua on a deeper, more layered level. And it makes me understand the importance of, for me, and how I carry myself as a kai whakahua going forward. So, yeah, that's a little background on that. But I'm going to stop talking now. Does anyone have any questions? I'm going to let you on a little secret. Today was the first day that I saw this exhibition in real life. So I read the publications first, and it definitely impacted on how I responded to the images because I was looking at them in a digital format. And I think it's why my focus went towards the naming of the photographs, or perhaps even maybe the lack of naming. And why I was drawn to these in particular, I think, is just a tell of what I'm interested in as a photographer, especially the one at the back. I like to photograph people within their home environments. That's why I felt particularly drawn to that. And these two wahine are just beautiful. Like, there's so much energy that's emanating off of those portraits. And I think it's why I felt particularly drawn to them, because as a wahine Māori myself, I feel I can, I don't want to say make assumptions, but I can speak to maybe what might have been going through their minds at the time. It just felt like something I was comfortable with. Yeah. Seeing it here today, though, in real life, I mean, it's a really beautifully curated exhibition. And there are some really cool little gadgets floating around. Also, I think upstairs, if you haven't checked it out, do so while it's still here. Was really moving, but I like that I didn't get to see it until the morning of this kōrero, because I think that it brought that like ihi factor for me, that wow factor of like, okay, I'm here now, let's speak to it. A conclusion that I arrived to is that we'll never know the real context behind these images. And again, it brings me back to that whole idea of positionality, this beautiful academic buzzword we like to throw around now. Because when I'm looking at this image and I'm considering the positionality of the person behind the camera, the positionality of the wahine in front of the camera, the positionality of myself responding to this image, it's so layered. And essentially, like, you can't really arrive to any conclusive, at least I don't think you can anyway, arrive to any conclusive understandings of the image because of that, because we're all interpreting things through our own lens. I cannot presume to assume what the intention was behind the photographer who took these photos. And, you know, he probably had good intentions. Maybe, who knows? And as a wahine Māori, who also is a photographer, I'm coming at it at a very different angle as everybody else in this room would, in the way that they read an image as well. I get mad imposter syndrome when it comes to photographing other people. I still don't know if I'm doing it right. Like, I still question if the person in front of the camera feels safe, if they feel comfortable, if they're happy with their image. And then when I reflect on that, I realize, oh, well, therein lies the start. Because I'm actually considering those things in the first place. So what a process might look like for me, and I've developed it more and more over the years, it's very intuitive. But I like to open and I like to close with karakia. I like to form relationships with the people that I'm photographing. That's really important to me. And I think as well, that plays in part with the imposter syndrome thing, because if it was a stranger, I couldn't be as upfront about, you know, like what I'm feeling and how I'm making them feel. But then it makes for this beautiful, like, rich connection with myself and the person in front of the camera. And it means then that they're a part of the conversation. They know where this is going, or they have a say in where this is going. They know what the kaupapa is. And this, I'm speaking, this is in the context of, say, studio photography, or where I might be working towards a specific kaupapa. But if it's for people who might have asked me for a photograph of them, then it's really considering what their needs are over my own. Knowing that people might have chosen you for your specific style, and to be confident in that. And then the rest, essentially it's about honouring the autonomy of the person who you're photographing. That's what it's all about. It's autonomy. It's allowing people to be photographed how they want to be photographed. You're just a tool, basically. You're like the conduit for helping other people actualize their vision. But there's also a bit of balance. There's a balancing act too, because as a photographer with a distinct style, you also want to help your vision come to life too. And it's like this beautiful marriage of those two perspectives, again, meeting in the middle, and then hoping and praying that they like it. When it comes to people, which I guess is the main focus of this kōrero, it's a lot more complicated to me than when I'm doing my sort of art, my more creative photography. Because with the creative stuff, that doesn't necessarily portray a person. It's easy for me to pick places. It's easy for me to have the autonomy over where I want my work to go and who I want to see it. But when another person is involved, it makes it more complex. And that's why I think it's important that if there is another person involved, they're a part of the conversation. But photography in general, and with the digital age and where things go, it's a hard question to answer, because it's only growing and it's becoming like a really integral part of our day-to-day lives, even just phone photography. I'm really conscious to try not to post like babies' faces, like children's faces online, unless I have the permission of the parent, you know. Even then it's still iffy. And like with this new age of AI and stuff, it also adds another layer to it. But for myself, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. I think I prefer to see things in physical forms on walls than overseeing it in the digital space being sucked up by everything else. Because, yes, there are like complexities with institutional spaces and having these like living, like Māori beings hanging on these walls. But it's still in some way or another making it available and accessible to whānau who might come upon this and be like, I know that person, that's my tipuna. And then, yeah, coming in, I saw that there's a little bowl for cleansing yourself and a note to say that if you recognize anyone in these images, get in touch. And I'm assuming that there are protocols in place for how that is managed. It'll be a case-by-case thing with certain galleries and institutional spaces and how they manage what happens with these photographs, how they're read and who has access to them. But if I was to be in control of something like this, for me it would be important that accessibility is made available and that whānau have the opportunity to reconnect with their ancestors. That's the beauty, I think, that can come from things like this. Like, it does have complications, but there is that other kind of, yeah, aspect to it. There's like this push and pull between like knowing what feels tikka and what's not, what feels right and what's not. It's just selling your work, but it's like it's essentially being made from the whenua, or it's portraying a real life person, or this or that or this. Like, what feels tikka, what's not? But at the end of the day, you still have to make your bread and butter. But then also, you know, it's really layered. And I think that when it comes to your own personal mahi, when it comes to my own personal mahi, I go with what I think feels right. Yeah, what feels right to me. Yeah. Again, it brings me back to the whole tradition around kawemate and having living proof of our ancestors. And it's really important for me that while I'm still here and while I still have my koraua, my kuia and my life, that I'm taking their photographs so that I can, you know, take it with me and share it with my whānau and have that sit at the foot of their, you know, coffin when they pass on. Actually, a real life living example of that happened for me just recently. Yeah. If not for a couple of months ago, if I hadn't taken a portrait of my pup, Bill, then I wouldn't have had the opportunity to lay a print, a framed photograph of him at the feet of his coffin, and for my whānau to take that with them. And it was beautiful because in the digital realm as well, they had these photographs of them as well with my papa, of photographs of him as well that they got to share with the world. Sorry, I wasn't expecting to cry. But yeah, komatua. It's really important to me that their photos are taken. on the marae as well as a photographer, there are so many complexities that you have to consider. There are things you shouldn't photograph, you know, and you can be seen as a threat with a camera when you're in those spaces. So there are layers and layers that you have to consider as a as an Indigenous photographer or non-Indigenous entering those spaces. Yeah, it's a tool and like a weapon. It can be used as a weapon, eh? It has been used as a weapon historically. So I guess as a wahine Māori photographer, I'm trying to, yeah, weld it not as a weapon but as an offering. Yeah, when I traverse those spaces, I'm always thinking, like, what am I doing right now and how can I use this to give back, to make it worthwhile for whānau, to make it a taonga for the people I'm photographing. And sometimes the imposter syndrome creeps in and I don't always feel like I'm capable of welding that, but yeah, like I won't lie, it's not easy traversing these spaces as an Indigenous photographer. There are so many layers to it that have to be considered at all times, that it's tiring sometimes. You're not just trying to construct an image, you're considering all kinds of like tikanga related aspects that come into the space, and it makes it really challenging. At least that's my experience anyway. But I think intention is a really big thing, is having good intentions with what you're doing and why you're doing it, and then not letting that imposter syndrome take over, because then you wouldn't have these taonga images to pass on to people. Yeah, it's a case-by-case thing for me, though. Photographing people is entirely different for me than being out in the taiao. That in itself is an entirely, like, it's this huge, big, intuitive kind of process for me. It comes with a lot of responsibility, and I don't think that if you're unable to recognize that responsibility, I don't think that you're a kai whakahua, essentially. Yeah, makes it challenging, but it also makes it incredibly rewarding. Yeah, I guess when I was younger, I recognized the ability to be able to tell stories with photography. And at that time, I saw that it was actually quite an impactful tool to be able to communicate messages and stories. I was in high school at the time when I first learned how to take photos properly and then kind of construct photographs and communicate messages. Like, I was just kind of becoming really aware of myself as a wahine Māori and what that meant in this world, and I was able to communicate that through my photography. And then, yeah, fast forward, I started out at Massey as a VCD major. Oh my god, imagine if I stayed there. What the... Anyway, I ended up taking a paper in photography. And I met a couple of these guys in this room, and three of them. And I think what really drew me to then studying it was wasn't necessarily about the medium and what I could bring to it, but was more so about the people who were teaching it and how critical they were, and the way they educated, the way they made you kind of consider everything. Because I think as a photographer, you have to be, when there are all of these involved, you do have to be a lot more considerate when you're, like, entering that space. And it just really attracted me to it. It drew me in because I realized it was more about more than just taking a photo. yeah, there were layers to it that I was really excited to explore. Definitely, I felt like I've had to give up control. Yeah, and really meant that you just have to accept that's a part of this dynamic. That's what this person wants and needs, so going with it. I don't think I've ever felt extracted from, but yeah, perhaps I've had to let go of a bit of my own autonomy to, you know, consider the needs of the other person. Thank you.